COVID, 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 he's complaining. He's jealous of COVID's media coverage.
A former U.S. president attacking the current U.S. president. I'm Ira Melman, and we'll examine the role and effectiveness of surrogates campaigning as the election nears. Remember, you can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also coming up on today's program, further reports and conversation on the U.S. election, now just days away on today's VOA Asia. Days before the November 3rd election, the campaigns of President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden are making their last pitch to voters, sending high-profile surrogates, including former President Barack Obama and the Trump family children. White House correspondent Patsy Wittig-Aswara has the story.
Former President Barack Obama has been traveling across the country campaigning for his former Vice President Joe Biden.
Are you ready to go?
His role? To throw verbal punches at President Donald Trump.
What's his closing argument? That people are too focused on COVID. He said this at one of his rallies. COVID, 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 he's complaining. He's jealous of COVID's media coverage.
With his ridicule, Obama plays the role of attack dog for Biden, who has been campaigning on a message of unity.
We're going to heal our nation.
Presenting himself as a national healer for a divided country.
Normally, that's a strategy that's reserved for the vice presidential nominee. But when you have someone who's as good an attack dog as Barack Obama and who seems more than willing to play that role, since he is more popular and better known than Kamala Harris, it's a reasonable judgment call.
The last Republican president, George W. Bush, has not campaigned for Trump.
First, let us remember we have faced times of testing before. Following 9/11, I saw a great nation rise as one to honor the brave, to grieve with the grieving, and to embrace unavoidable new duties.
In May, Bush released a video message of unity amid the pandemic. Trump responded with a tweet criticizing the former president for not speaking up during his impeachment. His campaign is relying instead on the president's adult children, Don Jr., Eric, Tiffany, and Ivanka Trump.
Some of you were probably Democrats not too long ago, but you don't recognize what the party has become. Their platform lays out a plan to transform America into a socialist country.
He doesn't have the type of loyalty outside of his family, and the family has gained a great deal of prominence during these years. And it seems that many in his base really like to see his son and his daughter out there.
The candidate's spouses are also deployed. Jill Biden has been active on the campaign trail.
When Joe is president, you won't read the news shaking your head with tense shoulders.
Meanwhile, First Lady Melania Trump made her first solo campaign appearance on Tuesday after recovering from COVID-19.
Thank you for all the love and support you gave us when our family was diagnosed with COVID-19.
Obama will join Biden in the critical swing state of Michigan on Saturday. Trump will campaign Friday in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota with Republican candidates vying for a Senate seat. Patsy Wittig-Aswara, VOA News.
Patsy Wittig-Aswara is standing by. We'll talk with her about the election, campaigning, and what it means to Asia and the rest of the world. As promised, joining us is VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wittig-Aswara. Patsy, we just heard your report. I want to focus in a little bit on foreign policy as far as this election is concerned, maybe pointing toward Asia. Overall, what's the situation as far as foreign policy? It seems to me that it's fallen into a secondary role with the pandemic going on.
Yes, that's correct. And that's common with every election, right? I mean, most elections are about domestic politics. Foreign policy is number X. It's really not on the top of most voters' minds unless we're in a war. And so in particular, in this 2020 election, of course, the focus is on the pandemic and there's not been much discussion on foreign policy. However, we can take away just kind of the overarching difference between the two candidates is that while President Trump really emphasizes on America first, what the Biden campaign has been signaling is that they don't want America alone. So they will try to build back those old alliances, you know, rejoining the TPP, for example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, extending multilateral cooperation with ASEAN and the ASEAN Regional Forum and so on, and APEC, and to really just remind the region in Asia Pacific that the U.S. considers this an important region, you know, kind of like a back to a pivot to Asia that the Obama administration tried to do. So there'll be more of that. There'll be more emphasis on multilateral cooperation and alliances in the region.
President Trump, through his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, over the past few days, has been bringing an anti-China message to Sri Lanka and Maldives and now Indonesia, a very heavily placed an anti-Chinese message. How does this affect world affairs, do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we look at U.S. relations with other countries, and it's not just Asia, we look at this in Latin America, for example, in Africa, everything has been framed in a sort of competition with China context, right? And so if we look at the differences between the two candidates, it's actually quite similar. There are similarities between the Trump foreign policy towards China, as well as what the Biden administration say that the foreign policy will be. In terms of trade, for example, both Trump and Biden have repeatedly criticized China's unfair trade practices. On human rights, both Trump and Biden have condemned Chinese actions in Hong Kong and Xinjiang and Tibet and the Uyghurs. In the South China Sea, both candidates are also declaring that China's expansion in terms of maritime claims there to be illegal, and they want it to stop. On technology, it's also the same. You know, they've condemned Chinese technology transfer and what they call intellectual property theft from U.S. companies. Remember the case of Huawei and so on. But the key difference is, again, the principle of whether the U.S. wants to go at it alone, which is has been sort of the operating principle from the Trump administration, or do we want to bring allies to put pressure multilaterally to China, as well as, for example, North Korea. I think that is the key difference in terms of approach. But as far as what analysts have told me, what both Republicans and Democratic strategists have told me, in terms of interests and in goals, it's quite similar.
VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swearup will continue our conversation about the election and Asia and the rest of the world in just a moment. This is VOA Asia. We continue now our conversation with VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swearup. What has the campaign done as far as trying to get an Asian American vote?
So both the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign have tried to reach out to Asian American voters. They've done outreach. I do feel that the Biden campaign has made more of an effort. Although President Trump consistently says that he is the president that will be good to all minorities in the U.S. because he is the one who will be able to bring back the economy roaring back to its pre-pandemic stage, which lifts up everybody, including minorities. But in terms of specific outreach, both campaigns are doing it. I do see that the Biden campaign are doing it more in terms of Asian Americans and other minorities.
And from what you know, where does the Asian American population stand as far as their choice for the next president?
Yeah, so Asian Americans are really interesting. They're really the fastest growing segment of voters in compared to other racial ethnic groups in the U.S. There's about 11 or 12 million Asian Americans who will be able to vote this year. That's about 5% of the electorate. And in terms of their ideology, where they tend to lean to vote, that really varies by origin group. You know, for example, Vietnamese Americans are more likely to identify as Republicans. Indian Americans are most likely to identify as Democrats. And of course, it also doesn't just depend on where they come from or their ethnic background, but also where they live. And of course, it also doesn't just depend on the ethnic group that they're from, but also where they live, right? Do they live in a red state or in a blue state? All of that, of course, affects how Asian Americans vote.
Patsy Whitaker-Swearup is the VOA White House correspondent. Patsy, thank you so much for being with us on VOA Asia.
Thank you. My pleasure.
U.S. military veterans tend to vote Republican in presidential elections, and a majority will likely do so again this year. But VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports some polls suggest that the president's traditional advantage among veterans may be eroding.
A recent Military Times poll shows 52% of veterans plan to back President Donald Trump this election.
I think a lot of people are looking at President Trump and saying, I can vote for him for the simple fact that promises made, promises kept.
Fifth-generation combat vet Jeff Jordan, who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, applauds Trump's Afghanistan troop reduction and peace negotiations with the Taliban.
I think at this point, the right thing to do is pull back because, look, we've been in Afghanistan nearly 20 years. What do we have to show for that?
Not only has Jordan thrown his support to Trump, he decided to run for Congress.
The veteran community is important to me.
A big part of his platform is outreach to older veterans, like Vietnam vet and Trump supporter Curtis Herrick.
If you believe he's a nasty personality and don't think about all the rest, you might throw the baby out with the bathwater because he's really getting things done.
Herrick says he values Trump's decision-making skills.
He works about 20 hours a day, and he decides really quickly. When President Obama had the first surge, he anguished for 9 months before he'd make the decision.
But about 42% of veterans polled said that by November 3rd, they will have voted for Trump's Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden. That includes longtime Republican and Marine vet Jim Naylor.
I've never voted Democrat.
Who voted for Trump in 2016.
It was a big regret after that. I felt dirty about it.
Hi, my name's Jim.
Naylor created a viral video for the group Republican Voters Against Trump in 2020 after Trump criticized veterans and service members, including the late Senator John McCain, Trump's former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who testified against Trump on Ukraine during impeachment proceedings. Naylor also said Trump's troop pullout from Syria last October dishonored the military.
He didn't send them home. He sent them just to countries, to his quote, that are paying for us to be there. He sent them to Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia pays. That seems so antithetical to what we go out there to fight for. We're not mercenaries. We don't fight for the highest bidder. We fight for what's right.
Nearly two-thirds of female vets polled by the Military Times disapprove of Trump's presidency.
This is a hat for my first ship.
As a former ship navigator, Navy vet Lauren Sims compares Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic to steering a ship through a storm.
Donald Trump's job is to set a course for our country and make course corrections in terms of this pandemic and fighting it. And he hasn't. He hasn't set a course, let alone corrections. And it's really scary. I truly believe that Joe Biden is a person that will do that.
Much like undecided voters in the general population, a small percent of veterans polled are split between third-party candidates or sitting out the election.
My choices, in my view, are either cyanide or, you know, arsenic.
Iraq War veteran Josh Hill voted third party last time in protest, and once again does not like any of the choices. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
Now on VOA Asia, the U.S. Supreme Court extended mail-in voting deadlines in the key battleground states of Pennsylvania and North Carolina, a setback for the Trump campaign. Brian Wood reports.
The U.S. Supreme Court dealt setbacks to Republicans Wednesday, allowing mail-in ballot deadline extensions in Pennsylvania and North Carolina. Both states are pivotal to President Donald Trump's re-election chances, particularly Pennsylvania, where Trump won in 2016, but is now trailing Democratic challenger Joe Biden in several opinion polls. The conservative majority court rejected the Pennsylvania Republican Party's request to block the state's deadline extension for receiving mail-in ballots. The action leaves in place a lower court's ruling. Mail-in ballots there will be counted as long as they are received up to 3 days after the November 3rd election. The Supreme Court also rejected the Trump campaign's request to block North Carolina's mail-in ballot extension, which allows votes to be counted up to 9 days after November 3rd.
That was Reuters correspondent Brian Wood. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Dow. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I am Ira Melman in Washington.